Stardate 96762.34. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name's Mike Moody. I guess I'm a big-time Star Trek fan. Let's kind of reintroduce ourselves a little bit, guys. And with me is...
Grant Davis. Wait, you think you might be kind of a Star Trek fan? Is that what you just said?
Well, the reason I hesitate is because I'm looking right at Clyde. And I'm like, who's the bigger Star Trek fan, me or Clyde? But we'll get to Clyde in a minute, so
he's
shut up.
Flexing his Spock hand at you?
Yeah.
Yeah, menacingly.
I can't.
Oh, yeah, you can't.
I can't do it.
Oh, yeah, you can't do the Vulcan salute.
You're a huge Trekkie and you can't Spock.
I know, it's sad. It's really sad.
Do they make like a little glove for you so you can...
I can hold my fingers apart like and then try, but it's a pretty sad thing.
Rubber bands. Maybe some rubber bands for you. Mm. I'm Grant Davis. Like I was saying, I am the noob to Trek. I don't know much about it. And my first real adventure with Star Trek is Star Trek Discovery. So I kind of know a little bit about the other worlds, but I've never invested in watching any of the other TV shows. And I've watched one or two of the new reboot movies. And I saw Wrath of Khan at one of those live riff track things.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe that doesn't count.
No, it does not. That's not how you're supposed to watch that movie. Clyde.
I'm Clyde Haynes, and I am a hardcore Trekkie. I mean, I'm just shy of, like, attending conventions, but I've done a bunch of other things that puts me deep, deep, deep into the Trek hood, if you would.
The Trek hood. All right.
You write fanfic. We know.
And I will not deny nor confirm my writing of any fanfic.
We'll find some. That Tumblr later.
Yeah, we're going to read some on Patreon.
They banned all that stuff on Tumblr, so too bad.
Oh, also, it's with that us, kind.
Yes, it's that kind.
Is me, Mariah Gossett. I'm back again. Hello. And I'd say I'm like a medium Trekkie. Is that like on the scale of Trekkies? So you're... I grew up, you know, watching... Voyager, watched a lot of Next Generation. I've dabbled in the original series and watched plenty of the movies. And Clyde and I disagree on the beauty that is Saving the Whales.
Yeah, I could have done without that.
I love that movie.
It's so good.
It is really good. It
is like
the biggest like box office Star Trek hit. Like, it's like the biggest movie.
Just take the whales out. Just Why? If you get rid of the whales, it's a fantastic
Lucy
movie.
And George, that movie would not be the same without
just
Lucy and
what
George.
What a weird premise. Save the world by saving a couple whales?
Listener, we're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery, Season 2, Episode 7, Light and Shadows. I got to say right up front, guys.
Is this a hot take?
It is a lukewarm take.
Oh, no.
Lukewarm take!
All right. I guess I'll start. So I was not a big fan of this episode. It just felt like we're going to move the chess pieces around. We're going to throw in some adventure because, hey, we got to fill the hour. It felt like we were introduced to Spock, but I'm still waiting to meet him somehow. I don't know. It wasn't the best debut of Spock. And I just the writing was rough on this one. And I think this is my least favorite episode so far. Not because I was really anticipating like this great episode or this great entrance from our new Spock, but I don't know. We'll get into it.
See, if you would just like give up on the Spock thing, you wouldn't be disappointed.
No, I'm not.
I keep wasn't... trying to tell everybody like this Spock thing. Mm-hmm. You just let go.
You keep trying to tell people.
I'm just saying.
Every
it's
week
not gonna
you're
happen.
Disappointed that Spock isn't on here.
I'm just convinced that he's barely on here, and we see him. But like Mike said, we didn't really meet him.
We didn't get to meet him. Yeah, he didn't seem like a character. He seemed like a plot device again, even though he was on screen.
Or isn't prop. This the Spock that you guys are all used to? Isn't this the same exact Asperger's Spock that's like
yeah. Now he has dyslexia, poor guy. Okay,
they just loaded him up with whatever they needed.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, who wants to give me their hot or potentially lukewarm take on this episode?
I'll jump in because I think I'm going to disagree ever so slightly with you. I enjoyed this episode. I will agree that there was one thing with the writing that really bothered me is that I know they gave us a wonderful excuse for why Pike got on that shuttle and he just had to fly that shuttle. But the minute they said, oh, well, you know, Stamets is time, you know, he's impervious to being time sensitive, then I was thinking, well, why the hell wasn't he flying the shuttle in the first place?
Yeah.
So the writing on that just didn't work with me. But outside of that, I thought the pacing was good. I really kind of enjoy that it was an episode that wasn't heavy on the character-driven nature that we're used to. But in terms of giving us something to look at and kind of, you know, some action, I enjoyed it.
Okay. Mariah.
Yeah, I mean, I know in every show there's eventually going to be that transitional episode, and this was definitely their episode. I mean, not just in Star Trek, just in general TV writing. I think there's always those instances when that is going to happen. I do agree, though, it felt like they had, you know, most shows have A plot and B plot, and like I'm down to explore those two, you know, whatever plot lines they're coming up with. But it felt like they had like half written A plots and B plots, and they're like, how do we fit these together in a way that makes sense so that we're like still attached to Discovery? I would have been fine with just following Burnham on this whole trip home, seeing more of, you know, the Spock household. Like, give me more of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel a little bit like they've spent other episodes where they've crammed so much crazy stuff into one episode. They had an entire Kelpian liberation episode last week, which just felt like that was a lot of stuff that you tried to accomplish in one episode. And here it felt like a little bit more like they're spinning their wheels, like, all right, we need to move the chess pieces in place because we're going to do some crazy stuff on some Talos 4 planet. Mm-hmm. And if you guys watch the trailer for that next week's episode, it looks kind of awesome. But yeah, it was a lot slower than their usual pacing.
Which I almost appreciated a little bit. I was like, because sometimes it's like, holy cow, this was all in one. Like, how long have we been on this ship? How long has this timeline been going on? So I kind of appreciated the breadth, but I do think there were some issues in like final execution.
I think we're so used to having like this heavy, really thought-provoking episode. This was kind of like watching a Vin Diesel movie. Right,
I don't think that would have been cool.
No, I mean, I'm not saying bad, but I mean,
are we talking Boiler Room? Are we talking Triple X?
No, we're talking like the Triple X Fast and the Furious.
Was like that vapid?
No, what I'm saying is you kind of know what you're getting, and if you're just looking to be entertained, there were some interesting moments. Like if you talk about like the Burnham Giorgio fight, right? Like if you're talking about, you know, the Matrix-looking sentinel that attacks the shuttle, right? Now, yes, it falls apart if you're looking at the fact that none of that was really explained well, right? But if you're just looking at, like, the aesthetics, it was kind of cool to watch.
Of course, it looked great. Yeah, it would look really cool. It always does. The show always looks great. But one of the big problems I had was a lot of this, even though it did seem like a placeholder episode, not necessarily a placeholder episode, but let's get to where we need to get for the next episode and get this plot moving type of episode. Like, hey, we need Burnham and Spock together and we need them hiding out and eventually they're going to go to Talos 4. So we need to kind of get them together and get them there. So this felt like the show had a lot of just work to do. And then they tried to throw in some of the greatest hits that we as fans like. Like, hey, let's have a Giorgio Michael fight. Hey, let's have some crazy, wacky, Tilly Stamets saving the day banter. Let's have some tit for tat between Pike and Tyler, right?
But Mike, we like the greatest hits. What are you complaining about?
No, but it felt lukewarm here.
We have an entire podcast dedicated to the show because we like those hits.
I'm in the tank for this. I like them too, but it just wasn't all as entertaining as it could have been for me, and especially the stuff with Spock. I didn't find any of that. I know they were trying to root it in such emotion, right? They even gave us an extra layer of sympathy towards Spock. They gave him a disability of sorts to, you know, give him a little more vulnerability. But that just didn't work for me. I didn't feel anything for that character. I didn't feel anything for all the characters that were living in the House of Sarek. I didn't feel anything for Amanda. I didn't feel anything for Michael. I was just like, okay, we're just moving along here.
Well, you can't look at at Spock as a character yet because he's not a character. He's a prop right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's literally a set piece. But I thought there were a couple things that really jumped out at me as, oh, man, you could have done more. And these were kind of some high notes for me in the episode. So one was I kind of like the Amanda versus Sarek. And this dynamic of fleshing out their relationship and this, you know, her using choice words like husband and would you have left Vulcan for me? Like, I thought, wow, we're getting some depth there. And I kind of wanted just a little bit more before he was like, all right, let's just do this. And then did you notice Saru, like, really finding his groove as interim captain? Like, fearless yeah. Saru is kind of not, like, that dude is clutch.
Yeah. There was some good stuff in this episode, but as a whole, it was probably my least favorite episode of the season. But let's try to run through it chronologically and fail like we do. All right. So we started out with another commander's log.
Well, at least we got it this time.
Actually,
right?
Yeah. She did say commander's log.
She said personal log.
Was it personal?
It was personal log. I was thinking,
right,
one, Mike's going to ask me about this because he knows how much I hate this random voiceover.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, finally, you've done something that is more like Star Trek, where you start with personal log. So while I may have my issues with voiceover, you did what Star Trek does, so I cannot complain.
Do you like voiceover as long as it's a Star Trek log? Like, have you liked it in the past in other shows?
You know what? I liked it in Wonder Years.
Okay. He's a Daniel Stern fan, people. So we got confirmation that the Red Angel is potentially humanoid, wearing some exoskeleton technology from the future, thanks to Saru's supervision. So that's new.
In between her tarot reading? The, like, birth, life, death, present. Man. And I was like, this is literally what happens when you go get your tarots read. They're like, we're going to read your cards, and here's your past, and here's your present, and here's your future. And I was like, oh, man.
It's so good. I like how it bookends the episode with, like, the power of three.
Right.
There's three yes. of everything.
And the and three
then,
red dots.
Then there's the three red dots. And I'm like, well, that's on the nose. And now Aram's compromised.
If anything, Alex Kurtzman is really an on-the-nose, just very blunt type of writer and showrunner.
Just going to smash it over your face.
Very much, yeah.
I don't need subtlety to the point where it's just like too difficult to read.
Well, it just felt like there was not a lot of art happening here.
Well, but do you think that that's in part because this Trek is different in that you have so many like non-Trek watchers, right? So you have new people. And so if you're on the nose, it brings in these people who just kind of casually watch. I mean, yes, it's kind of like I saw that coming 15 feet ago for us.
Yeah.
But for new people, does it help?
Well, no, I'm not judging it as a Trek fan, really. Like if I was like a diehard Trek fan, I would break this thing apart, but I'm not. I'm judging it as, was this a good story that I found compelling and entertaining? And typically I do with this show, but with this one, I was just kind of like, I'm still invested in these characters in this show, but this one, I'm probably not going to watch this one again.
I did write a note, though, with their whole, like, theory of three, but then there's the seven light signals or however many there were, and then, but we have come down to where there's sort of, like, three entities looking to figure out what this Red Angel is, right? So you have the Federation, you have Section 31, and then you have specifically the crew of the Discovery, which I thought it was interesting.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. The nice three show. Almost That's competing right. facets.
Yes. They're all on the search. They were all on the search for Spock.
Yeah.
Did you get that right there?
I believe that's a reference to a different movie.
There you go.
Called The Search for Spock.
You impressed me, Grant.
Yes.
So Pike and Discovery seem to think the Angel is from the future. So we're trying to find out where did it come from? When did it come from?
So they deduced that it's potentially from the future because when they analyzed it, let me see if I get this right, there were some advanced technology tachyon or something.
Residual decay, isn't that what they said?
There was some Star Trek bullshit that told them it was from the future.
Yes.
So it's like, we don't have that technology anywhere in the entire galaxy because we fully know it, even though our mission is to constantly be exploring it. And we just found some crazy star like two episodes ago that was dying that had crazy amounts of like tech that we did never know about and like information. So Whatever. Sure.
Well, everything
it's from the future.
Everything has been pointing to the fact that the Red Angel or whatever is making these signals is from another time. And we got confirmation here because we got a time rift, which was visually pretty damn cool. And action movie-wise, pretty damn fun.
That's all I'm saying.
I did really love Pike in the cold open when he's having his banter with Tyler, who when I write down Tyler, I just put, next to it. But like him throwing the comm back and forth at each other was like, I enjoyed it.
I did too.
Yeah.
I like how snarky he is. And he's like, well, as long as I'm sitting in this seat, I'm the captain. Your badge doesn't mean shit.
The
whatever.
Chair outweighs the badge. Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny because I'm just not enjoying this Tyler.
Right. That's why it says,
I actually like
see the notes?
Old Tyler.
Yeah.
But like this Tyler, I'm just like,
he's so moody.
Well, yeah. I think we're getting there because at the end, I wasn't liking the dynamic between Tyler and Pike either through this. Like, are they just going to be an arguing couple here and there? This just feels dumb. But it's kind of like what they're doing with Burnham and Spock. We need to go through some not so compelling stuff to get them to the compelling stuff. And that's what they're doing here with Tyler and Pike. Because by the end, they found a camaraderie. They found a mutual respect for each other. And they actually started vibing. And it became kind of fun. So hopefully that's the vibe we're going to see between them going further. You know,
they must recognize that Dreamboat Mick Sexy Wingtips Captain is the new fanboy Dreamboat character or whatever, right?
That's why they just keep making Tyler like more and more unattractive.
Right. Well, I don't know.
He was the Dreamboat last year.
Right.
He was. And now that we have this new pretty Pike, I think that when they have Ash come in and attack him, they're purposely trying to frame it for us, the audience, that he's the villain. We're not supposed to like Ash at this point because we, the audience, are fully on board with Pike. We want to follow him. And Ash, in a way, betrayed us, the audience, as well because Vok killed Culber. So I think what they're doing is a little bit intentional. They want to continue to frame him as a bit of an antagonist since we don't have a face on a proper antagonist in this show necessarily. It's a show about like Discovery. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got Georgiou.
Kind of. But she is more like.
Yeah, it's gotten weird there too.
She's not a straight up antagonist.
She's like Sark from Alias or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's like bad guy, good guy, or Spike maybe from
Buffy.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, are they setting up like Leland to be, I guess, our new, like, he's the bad guy?
Yeah, but then he seemed a little soft this episode too.
But
yeah.
Georgiou is the only one telling us that Leland is the bad guy.
That's true.
He seems like a pretty good guy. In this episode, he did anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely convoluted, and you're right. We don't have a clear villain. But I think anybody who trusts Georgiou is an idiot. I mean, because...
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
She is up to something.
She's up to something. I think it's big.
She's Benjamin Linus.
Huh? I was waiting for it. Like, when you went Alias, I was like, I was thinking, at least he didn't say Lost.
There. We're getting there.
It's coming.
Yeah. Don't worry. Well, I mean, we got Time Anomaly. We got Donkey Wheel Spinning. I got more stuff.
Yeah, there was a Time Anomaly. We had a...
The numbers.
Numbers.
A major character repeating numbers, a numerical pattern over
yeah,
and over.
Yeah, I definitely knew. I was like, oh yeah, I'm excited. I'm nipping
Yeah, see, that all just felt so reheated to me. That just took me out of it so much.
I would agree with you there.
And it was dyslexic numbers. It was such a like, oh, what an interesting puzzle that they solve 3 minutes later.
But like, that dyslexia was doesn't just reverse things.
No.
Right.
It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. He's dyslexic. Hey, computer, I'm going to repeat this number pattern to you backwards because he's dyslexic. Now do the work for me and tell me what it is. That was so dumb.
It was so unnecessary. There's one line where it's like, it's kind of like dyslexia. So I'm like, okay, they have a little bit of wiggle room for him just saying numbers backwards because
space dyslexia.
He reverted to him being a kid. Mm. And man, did I love that we finally get Spock and he's not the Spock you guys wanted.
Well, no,
at all. It's like this caricature. Making fun of what Spock is.
It's funny that you say that because you're probably characterizing me as somebody who has a vision in his mind of what he wants this Spock to be. And I don't really. I just want a compelling character.
I think my struggle is the Spock that we've known in TOS and every kind of incarnation since has been really specific. And the Spock that they've been talking about and giving us is nothing like that Spock. Like, it feels as though we've got this I don't know, this archetype that's been built up in our minds for decades, and they've just kind of dismantled it in a season and a half.
No. Amanda says one line where she goes, "Spock is not how you remember him." And then she turns to the audience and winks at you, Clyde. Remember that? It was so good.
Yes, I do remember that.
So it's all okay now. It's okay that he's just a plot device at this point.
It's fine. I mean, I'm willing to write it out to see where it goes. He looks cool.
I did enjoy. So, like, now that we're, I'm assuming we've jumped and now we're on, like, Burnham's on Vulcan.
Yeah. We're all over the place. This is a time displacement episode.
Yeah. Over the place. But I enjoyed seeing them as kids and, like, their interactions with each other, which I thought was kind of sweet. Like, you're like, oh, they did at some point like each other.
Yeah, it was cute.
But here's my big thing. As a woman with massively curly hair, when I see Michael as a child when she's first getting introduced to Spock, and then now that she's going into Vulcan training has that straight bowl cut with bangs. I just wrote hair change, underline, like
that is some,
that is some new forms of technology that I am not aware of.
Toxic relaxer, man.
As a husband of a woman who has like who's natural and curly. Yeah, even I was shocked. Like,
right?
That doesn't seem right.
I just thought it was a wig.
I mean, it is obviously it is a wig, but yeah, that is a small wig for a lot of hair to be under.
To go from natural to like that Vulcan cut that we're always used to, the effort that one must undergo is pretty immense, right? And like I said, I'm married to a Black woman who I've seen the process. It would take a lot, and to maintain it would just be like, I doubt that they have a salon that handles natural hair on Vulcan. Like, I just don't think they do.
No, I don't think so.
So, I mean,
where is that street?
Because if they do, I got a couple people, that could be a money making business right there.
I really liked how Vulcan looked.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with what Vulcan's supposed to look like, but this did, for a minute, look like a Star Wars scene more than Star Trek.
Yeah.
With like everything was like
red pointy cliffs.
Yeah. And like these ships that have like this kind of worn paint on them. It's like bright colors and everything just seemed a little bit more oddly saturated than I think a lot of the blue lens filter show.
Yeah. More natural colors.
Yeah. I feel like most of the time we see Vulcan in other series, it's under attack and on the verge of being destroyed. So this was a pleasant surprise to see how beautiful it was.
Vulcan, gentle rain.
Yeah, that was nice.
Vulcan is typically a lot of orange and red cliffs and lots of caves. And we did get into a cave here. But speaking to the old school Star Trek fans in the room, Sarek was practicing Tok'mar, which is a meditation that can bring, I guess, lost family members back home. Had we heard of this before in lore? I
wasn't familiar
with
it. I wrote it down and I was like, I should Google that later.
Yeah. Okay, listener, we do this podcast right after the episode airs, right after watching it. So we're not going to have all the answers, but reach out to us at Star Trek Pod on Twitter if you know the answer to that. So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of figured that it was something like the telepathy that Vulcans kind of sort of have. Mm-hmm. And so I thought this was some rare ritual that would allow him to at least connect with someone else. But I don't really know. And, you know, you forced me to hop in my car and drive to the studio immediately after watching it so I couldn't Google it.
That was his idea.
Whoa. Didn't we sort of see something like this in last season, when you have Sarek reach out across some mind meld thing to Burnham?
But that's just like mind to mind. It's not something that can
That's like a mind Skype call. Like, he wasn't trying to lead her home.
But I think we did see that Spock used something like this to find Burnham when she was lost.
We keep seeing elements that seem like Cerebro exists in this world.
It's just what they needed to be for the episode.
I was just thinking about how absurd it is with the vastness of space that we have a spaceship trying to fly around in three dimension, going up, down, left, right, to try and find a dude in space. Like, oh, we got to find Spock. That's not just needle in a haystack. That's bigger metaphor needle in a galaxy.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed kind of absurd. And then they up the ante with now we have someone lost inside of a time vortex when Pike and Ash get lost in their ship. And I'm like, oh, man, they keep doing this thing where there are certain people that are able to hone in and figure out how to find people, find the needles in the haystack. Mm-hmm. So if we have Sarek being able to kind of do a mental outreach to his biological kid, and then you also have, what's his name, Stamets, being able to tap into this mycelial network, and he's like, oh, I have woolly bear, water bear, what are those things called?
Oh, the tardigrade. Tardigrade DNA.
I have tardigrade DNA.
Right.
Which they so casually say, and it's bear? So absurd.
Where did you come from, woolly bear?
Aren't they called water bears?
Water bears.
Okay.
Anyway, and then that enables him to also just pinpoint. I thought at least like they tie that in consistently a few different places here.
Yeah, they did. I mean, there was some thematic overlap happening with the two plots a little bit. One of the big differences was on Discovery, the whole team is working together to find Pike and the lost shuttle. And over on Vulcan, we have Amanda kind of working against Sarek. Mm-hmm. Now, Clyde, what you said earlier about Amanda's role here was kind of resonated with me. I liked, even though I didn't feel emotionally connected to a lot that was going on Vulcan, I did like that she stepped up a little bit here and asserted
old mama bear. Yeah.
She asserted her authority in that family. That was pretty cool.
She's actually one of my favorite characters this season.
Yeah.
I think in part because she's like her character is really rich and kind of focused. So when she's kind of dealing with the issues that come to her, she's all in. So she is mama bear, and now she's dealing with kind of these marital issues like, hey, I've sacrificed for you. What have you done for me? Like, it, and then this balance between one, you've got two children. You're trying to protect one, but you don't want to completely isolate the second. Like, she's just all in. And I think she's doing a great job. And so I like what we're getting out of Amanda.
She gave a pretty cold shoulder to Burnham based on some very vague information that Burnham gave her, like, oh, I really did something mean and burned bridges with Spock. And she's like, how dare you, you're dead to me. I'm going to have to find Spock myself. Bye. And then, like, the next time we see each other.
I think she was more trying to protect Burnham, though, because she was like, if you know where Spock is, you then would have to turn him in or else you're going to lose your position.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm Grant, I look at and blame, and I hate to say it, but I blame the writers for that. Like, they could have fleshed that out and really made it convincing on why she was so upset. But I feel like they skipped a step.
I think they tied it all together at the end when Sarek makes the ultimate call of like, no, Spock's going to go with Burnham and she's going to take care of him and hide him. Because it felt like at that point everybody was trying to protect the kids but do it in their own way that added to the conflict.
It was a pretty nice way to show that. Like, I really liked how they showed that relationship between Amanda and Sarek, that they are coming from two different sort of perspectives. Like, she has a human emotional side, but obviously she's familiar with how she must like appeal to logic when having an argument with him, and yet she can still do that while making an emotional plea. Like, how she blended that argument, I thought was actually pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And then him like listening and taking that in and it, like, reacting in a way that I thought, like, he does recognize that this is not something he wants to compromise in his relationship with her, but at the same time, he needs to protect their kids, and that's going to be what's best for her as well. Like, I like how they navigated that entire scene. And as far as there not being enough emotional punch or emotional investment like that you were saying in this episode, for me, that part, that episode, or that scene in particular, was pretty powerful.
Me too. That was the only like really big scene where I felt something.
So a question for all of you. Do you think that they're setting us up to explain why we never have heard of Amanda before?
Amanda?
We've definitely heard of Amanda.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't see her. Kind of.
Sure we do.
We do?
Yeah. She's in the original series in a couple episodes. She is played by Winona Ryder in the J.J. Abrams movies with an old lady makeup.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, Spock is definitely a mama's boy. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that is a definite trope.
Very much.
Like,
yeah. Well, it's interesting because
forgot about Winona Ryder.
What they were doing here with Spock, you know, they tried to give us a, like I said, another layer of vulnerability to him. And this was really done pretty well and pretty economically, I think, in the first J.J. Abrams Trek movie where they set up Spock's plight as he's discriminated against on Vulcan because he has a human mother, right? And so we're kind of seeing the exact same thing play out here a little bit, but they didn't want to repeat the same thing, so they added the extra layer of, oh, but he has space dyslexia as well because of his human mother. So it just feels like they're doing the same thing over and over.
Well, they wanted to provide us with a slightly different take. I mean, they're already going to have a different actor playing a very iconic character, one of the most iconic television characters of all time, right? And so I think the best way to introduce that same guy is, or a good way, maybe not the best way, but to show him in a completely different mental state and something very unfamiliar to what we're used to with him. And having him in a way mentally broken when he is a person who is known for his powerful mind is kind of a fascinating take on that. So having this Peck actor playing Spock and being babbling and being a little bit broken, like a beautiful mind kind of character, I think it was interesting to me.
I mean, I like the idea. It is just the execution that just was not compelling.
See, I'm not so sure I'm sold on the idea, only because I feel like it's a huge gap. Now, it kind of sort of makes sense because you've got to find something to do and make it your own, kind of like Grant said. But the Spock that we've known is so solid, right? And his mental acuity, like he's so solid that what we've kind of been given and everything that we've seen is of a lost boy who is always struggling with who he is and where he is. And so that's a bit of a gap when I'm looking and going, okay, so how do we get from here to that guy 10 years from now?
But that's okay. I mean, they're telling us that story. They're starting to, hopefully.
Yeah, I wondered for a second if the machine that Leland wanted to use on him was just going to like suck all of the emotion out of him and that was how he was going to get to this other state.
Okay, so at least we got, speaking of Leland, Georgiou's the boss in that ship, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean,
she basically underlines that point to us, the audience, when she says, I know a minor detail of blackmail about a character that we may or may not encounter again after this little one mission, and therefore I'm now the captain. Like, oh, sure, I guess.
Well, I was struggling with that because I was thinking, okay, so what happens if you tell Burnham that bit of news? What is she, some specialist on another ship,
right,
going to do to Leland, a captain in Section 31?
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to defend it, but yeah.
I was like, I would have been like, okay, tell her.
Yeah. Spock has dyslexia, guys. We're all a little bit underwhelmed about this episode, aren't we?
No, I mean, I still had fun with a lot of elements of it, but
all right.
There are certain things that are just...
Did you like that there was a constant, like in Lost?
Wait, what was the constant?
Oh, you didn't catch that? I thought this was definitely going to be something you latched onto. The reason that...
Alice in Wonderland?
No, the reason that Stamets... Well, that was Spock's constant, yes. But the reason that Stamets was able to pinpoint where the shuttle was because he used the mycelial network as his, quote, constant.
Oh, did they say that?
Yeah, they said that.
Mm. Oh, man. Super Lost reference. That one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I had to keep pausing and looking down and writing notes during scenes.
Right. The plight of the Star Trek podcast.
I had like one other note for the Spock, like dyslexia, his mind is going. I feel like if I was going to picture what I know about Spock being in that state of mind is like he would just be in like some weird form of deep meditation. Like he is deep mm-hmm. in his mind.
Sure.
Like we're not going to see it, but he is gone. Yes. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like he is deep within whatever is going on in this brain. But yeah, the muttering and like, you know, I was like, does he, who is he seeing in the room with him? Why is he talking about this out loud? Like I get the notes thing like that. Like some of that stuff made sense. But I was mm-hmm. like, I feel like there should have been a note to him as like either a director or the writer being like, hey, 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 no, no, no. You need to just look like that's all going on in your brain. Don't actually say it out loud.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the execution was just a little in your face and all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't compelling. It was just like, okay, he's just – and I was watching this with the closed captions as I do because I'm a good Star Trek podcaster. And the closed captions just kept saying, Spock continues to mutter.
Yeah.
Right, I was so like, yep, that's what's in that's the script. That's what he's doing. Then like why are you verbalizing yeah. anything? Why isn't it yeah. just like your face is muttering?
Well, clearly they wanted to have – key lines
or the numbers
to right. articulate like that he seems to be to some degree regressing or at least picking up on what's going on around him and trying to communicate, but he's sort of lost in some in time or whatever's yeah. going on with his mind.
Do you guys remember when they did that transition where they're like looking at the clock and I'm assuming it's the clock saying how long they have before the radiation is going to kill Pike and Ash, and then they transition back to I think the cave. And they, like, let that number linger. And I couldn't. I should have, like, run it back to figure out what that number was. But I was yeah. like, wait, am I supposed to remember this number? What number was that? Does it have any significance? But I think it started with not the numbers that ended up correlating to anything else in the episode.
Right.
Lost.
I don't want to be looking at numbers, man.
I was like, I gave up on Lost for this reason. Like,
yeah, I hate that show.
Yeah.
Not really.
What you do?
Yeah, but him repeating these numbers seemed like he was specifically trying to get across that code to Burnham in order for her to, or to anyone who was around him, for them to help him get to Talos IV, mm-hmm. which you guys must be familiar with. I don't know what Talos IV is.
Okay, so I recently watched The Menagerie, which is kind of a retelling
of the... Lorca's Menagerie?
No, not Lorca's Menagerie. I should probably like say what that is, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you should plug that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, I'll plug it as well. Well, I didn't plug the Slack earlier, did I?
No.
We haven't done that yet.
I haven't done that yet.
But if you guys want to become patrons, go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Give a $2 per episode pledge. That's about $8 a month. And in exchange, you can join our Slack channel, which is called Lorca's Menagerie.
All right. So the Menagerie is a original series episode that is a bit of a retelling of the unaired pilot called The Cage. So everybody knows about The Cage. The Cage was the unaired Star Trek pilot that starred Captain Pike and not Captain Kirk as the captain of the Enterprise. So I believe it was season one, could have been early in season two of Star Trek. The Menagerie told the story of a disabled Pike. Pike is in a chair. Pike can't speak. He can only speak by making buttons on his chair beep. And he can say yes or no, and that's about it. And it's very sad. And so Spock takes the Spock kind of kidnaps him and takes him on a voyage and kind of steals the Enterprise and lies to everybody in order to get Pike to Talos IV. So it's a two-parter. It's a mystery. And basically throughout the entire episode, Spike. I said Spike.
You did it.
Wait for it.
And
it's like I'm trying to do it. The almost the entirety of The Cage, the original pilot, is shown on screen to our characters to explain why they're going to Talos IV. And basically, in The Cage, what happens is Pike ends up on Talos IV and there are these Talosian, those are the guys with the big brains, big heads.
The big brain dudes.
Big brain dudes, yeah. And
the Watchers.
Yeah, pretty much. And they have this kind of like undefined power. They're
illusionists, right?
Yes, they're illusionists. They make you see and hear things in three dimensions. And they basically want to make a underground zoo of all the species in the universe. And so they need humans. So they attract our Enterprise crew there. And they try to give Pike this beautiful woman and create these great scenarios so he would enjoy it there. And the whole point of the episode and the whole theme is that man cannot be satisfied with such a synthetic lifestyle, that right. we need the real shit. So yeah.
I think what lured Pike to kind of Talos IV originally was there was this distress signal.
Right. It was fake distress.
It was signal. A fake distress signal. And there was only one person, this woman, who survived. And,
right.
And as a result, was it General Article 7 says that no ship can go to Talos IV.
Right. So, yeah, in the menagerie, they end up going to Talos IV, and seeing how Pike is an invalid now, it seems like his dying wish was to go back to Talos IV and accept that synthetic life so he can walk around and live and walk and talk and be with this beautiful woman who he fell in love with there.
So like the Matrix.
Sure. Yeah.
They plug him into the Matrix.
Yeah. They plug him into the Matrix. That's pretty much it.
There's a lot of Matrix references in this.
Well, we got like a Matrix robot attacking.
Yeah, a Sentinel. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're called.
It was a drone from 500 years in the future.
Well, it was our drone, but the people in the future jacked it up with 500 years worth of technology and sent it back to us.
Made it some Jules Verne looking squid thing to attack them. And then we also have Stamets being able to see the code.
Can we talk about, I don't understand how he can transport onto the ship if he has figured it out. How can they not just transport them out of the ship? Yeah, or like I think it's lock onto the ship in some way.
It's because
like,
they're phasing in and out too much and he's not, I guess.
I don't know.
I stand by the fact that he should have just been on the ship, the shuttle.
The whole time.
The whole time.
But he can't fly the shuttle. Only Pike can fly the shuttle because he's good at it. Didn't you hear the dialogue?
Yeah, but he flew the shuttle out or was starting to fly the shuttle out before.
That's true.
Before it got drugged back in. That really bothered me from a plot point.
I love that, you know, Pike, when all this shit's going down, the Sentinel's attacking the ship. Stamets is making all these calculations and Pike is helping him and telling him what to do. And they're doing all this like insane math.
Tyler's just banging that thing on the dash.
They're just like, I guess I'll just hit this thing with a hammer for a while. I'm the dumb guy.
I'm a Klingon. Just punch stuff.
I am man. I shall destroy.
Exactly. Yeah.
With no result of anything.
No.
He's just banging on this thing.
Yeah.
I really liked the scene where Stamets was able to beam on there and then like guide them back.
It was fun.
Because for me, I don't know how strict they are supposed to be to logical explanations for everything. I just thought that's Star Trek in a way. Like,
yeah,
they do kind of silly things in the episodes, right?
It was fine. As long as it's entertaining.
I don't know. As a writer, I think I would have just been like, no, he should just be on the ship and then he can Star Trek bullshit some stuff. On the ship where he's like, oh no, I have a perfect way to calculate how to get out of here. And like, well, he's found a way to talk to Tilly and like, he's figured this out with her.
Well,
you know, like,
I think they really liked Stamets and Tilly together. Yeah. So they wanted him back on Discovery so they can kind of bond and do their thing.
Well, and it sounds like there was this whole moment that was really, really quick in there where Pike was explaining and Ash kind of called him on. The reason why you want to be on this ship is because you feel guilty. But I was like,
that came out of nowhere.
It came out of nowhere. I mean, the payoff was nothing.
They planted those seeds before, but it felt like it came out of nowhere here.
I mean, you could have had that same conversation in the mess hall. Like,
also, like, what does avoiding the war and then going into a riff in time have anything to do with each other?
Thank you, Mariah.
Like, yeah. I mean, it was just supposed to be playing on the fact that Pike feels like he hasn't contributed much to the Starfleet cause lately, so now he has to dive in headfirst into every mission, I guess. I don't know.
It was weak.
That doesn't resonate.
A really weak point.
Weak sauce.
I don't know. That kind of fit as well.
The contrarian voice here.
I buy into all of this. They just need to give me the weakest of explanations. And I'm like, fine. I'm good with that. It felt like Jarhead the movie or whatever. You know, these people are just there's this mentality when you are a soldier and you don't actually get to fight, but you're just kind of like.
But they're not soldiers.
They're not. They're scientists.
Core. Yeah.
Well, not just that, but it felt like lip service here. It doesn't feel like it. Like in something like Jarhead, it feels emotionally resonant. Here, it doesn't.
Yeah. And was it Ash like the top pilot in season one? Didn't he have to be?
He had to fly everything.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But they're not soldiers. They carry around weapons. They're not strictly scientists. Right. They're They're doing battle in every episode.
They fly straight into time tsunamis, man.
Yeah, they're part of a military science vessel.
Did they ever explain? So was it because they were like trying to look at the residual decay that this rift just appeared? I feel like they were like, oh my God, something's happening. And then the rift was there. And I was like, I feel like I never, I was like, but what caused it?
You know, I kind of have a theory based on that.
Alex Kurtzman's pen caused it.
They were talking in the very beginning about how they have these dense materials that seem to be following the Red Angel when the Red Angel pops up from the future, which makes me think that potentially in the future, something bad is happening. Like maybe the galaxy is collapsing.
An implosion.
And if if it's imploding again and everything's becoming super dense, and maybe this is only 500 years in the future, maybe something not man-made, but being made has caused this as sort of like a parallel to our own personal crisis going on here on Earth with our climate change. Mm-hmm. We've caused a problem.
Yeah.
And if we could only go back in time and
if we had saved the whales.
But maybe there is some sort of parallel going on here where
I mean, that idea was kind of underlined when Pike literally talks about we are in a fight for the future.
Always. We're always in a fight for the future.
Yeah. Good call.
You too, humans. So yeah, maybe this thing is like maybe each of these items are part of this puzzle piece, like saving that cult planet or the Kelpians or whatever. Like all of these are going to feed into a larger picture, but there might be some sort of personal nefarious intent of the Red Angel. We don't know.
And so maybe I have a new Red Angel theory now after this episode.
Here we go.
No more Iconians. Get them out of here.
No.
Yay.
No more.
I think Arium is the Red Angel, and she's coming back.
Oh.
Why?
Arium was breached in this episode.
Yeah, so she has her three red dots that blinked in her eyes three times, and so now something has encoded, right? And so I looked her character up to see. So she's
like a supermodel.
Right? She is, but the character has been, it's changed a few times. First it was like an augmented alien, but now it's an augmented humanoid. And mm-hmm. I think they're trying to place that purposefully. Mm-hmm. Also, apparently that character wasn't even supposed to exist. But then my fave, Neville Page, the creature designer, along with Glenn Hendrick, who's head of makeup, they came up with this crazy sketch. And the creators were like, oh my God, it's amazing. We have to have this character. So that's literally why this character exists.
Awesome.
Okay. That makes sense.
But yeah, so I
like that theory.
That's my new theory.
Yeah, and because and the last good look we saw at the Red Angel was a feminine physique.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly she's at least a sleeper cell for some sort of agent.
Right.
But then there's this link between her and that 500 years in the future drone squid thing. Because the squid thing essentially corrupted the data that put the virus into her head. Making her the Red Angel. So do you think they're on the same team?
Yes. So what I think, so when I was going to this whole why did this riff occur, is I think she caused the riff to send this thing back to then implant this whatever into her brain.
She knowingly did this?
Yes. So the Red Angel has sent this probe, knows, this probe is going to go out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get this probe, it to do what I needed to do, send it back.
So it's this kind of closed time loop narrative.
And
she creates herself.
And then and then she's gonna get the data that she needs to fix whatever catastrophe is happening right
now. Like in DS9 when Julian Bashir is his own grandfather. You guys didn't watch that?
It's a good one. It wasn't very good.
Nice callback.
But most things involving Julian Bashir weren't that great.
Agreed. So. That's an excellent theory. I'm with that one.
Did
you come up with this one or did you do some Reddit?
This is an official Predictus in my notes, wrote it down during the show.
Mm. All right. This is a Star Trek pod theory.
Exclusive.
Yeah.
500 years in the future, how far have we seen in the future with other Trek shows?
Not that much. It's
mm-mm.
been 100
so what's
years.
Voyager, 200?
Yeah. I mean,
almost.
I was thinking about this, right? So for the most part, 10 years in the future is the original series, right?
TNG is 87 years after Kirk.
Right.
After the original
series. And so we know there was a little bit of some time traveling stuff and overlap between TOS and the Next Generation. So it's all pretty close. And then all the others, when you look at Deep Space Nine and Voyager, they were all kind of like spin-offs. And so they're in a fairly similar time frame.
Yeah.
So 500 is like way beyond what
we've really seen.
But we have actually seen 500 years beyond that, because we saw it in episode 1,000 years in the future in that short trek.
Calypso.
Oh, yeah.
And the ship still exists, the Discovery, although that could have been a whole rebooted universe.
That could just be an illusion on Talos.
Oh, that's true.
I also thought it's interesting in that I think someone in our Slack channel made this theory, and you know, let me know if I'm right on that. But someone posited the idea that what if the ship's AI computer, especially when we see that it starts manifesting a consciousness, engaging with that guy in Calypso, what if that has evolved even further than that and becomes the Red Angel that goes back to its own ship, Discovery, to try and interact with itself there to send them on missions? To kind of serve its own future purpose.
Yeah.
I thought there was something interesting.
I'm still riding with Mariah on
this. Me too. Yeah. I'm going to take credit for that theory.
Wow.
I'm not going to take credit.
I invited her here first.
True captain material right there.
Yes.
Good job,
I delegated that theory.
Yeah. I'm just saying I think it's a great theory.
Okay. So, So I think the Talos thing might be a little problematic story-wise, because the Talosians can do anything. They can make anything appear.
Well, I'm struggling with the timeline of this.
Yeah, me too. Is this before the cage, after the cage?
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, I'm like trying to emotionally prepare that something's going to happen to Pike in this season, and it's going to be...
Yeah, I don't think I really don't think they'll go there.
So they have said previously that this is officially in the exact same universe as the original series.
Prime timeline, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Is it possible we could move into a new timeline at some point?
I mean, we've got it before with the Mirror Universe, so.
Is it possible that they see how good how much people are liking Anson Mount as Pike, and they're like, what if we just move this into another universe and then have him just continue on with Spock in this other show?
I don't think they want to do that, though, because I think they're eventually going to tie something into the new Picard show, which is in the Prime timeline as well. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to do that.
Yeah, but if they're on the Discovery ship and they can just jump between universes.
Sure, they can do that.
Yeah, maybe.
It'll be too much to hold in my head.
It will be, really.
It'll be way too much to hold in my head.
I wanted to mention that temporal time shift thing and the effect they were using with like seeing the shadow past and future versions of him.
I like that. That was cool.
It was pretty neat, especially when he sees that he shoots Ash and we don't
know. It's a good
fake out. Oh, yeah.
I was so excited. I was like, finally.
Some people are like, oh no. And Mariah's like, yes, bleed murder
that
him.
Pink Klingon blood, Ash.
I figured it, but when I first thought, I was like, oh, maybe this is like a time warped Ash is on the, you know, maybe there's going to be two of them at some point fighting each other on the ship.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Which I was like, that would have been a rad fight sequence, like Pike on Pike.
Yeah. Did you like the part where
Be Still My Heart?
A Girl Can Dream.
When Vok was arguing, or when Ash was arguing with Pike in the very beginning, right before the credits cue, and he's like, there's no way to get rid of Vok. And then Pike replies, I know the feeling.
Yeah, that was great.
I was like, is he the audience right now? But all of us are not.
Pike
liking,
is all of us.
Yeah, everyone's down on Ash, I think, lately.
I was kind of looking forward to, like, you know, with the time shifting, that maybe we would get to see Vok, you know, like we would. You know, his body would shift back to that.
That would have been cool.
Point. Yeah, that would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
I kind of miss Vulk.
So I've got another question for you guys. Like, how are you feeling about the way they're using this cast, right? Because if you think about it, what we're used to, and I hate to keep saying this, but what we're used to with Trek is you've got this cast, and we see a lot of them every episode, right? Like you have some you've got an engineer, a doctor, you know, occasionally a counselor. You've got, you know, people at the helm. You see the same cast. We haven't seen Jet in like three episodes or something.
Yeah,
where's
she at? I thought we were gonna get more of her.
Yeah, like we don't see the engineer. Like we get these like moments of Stamets, right? Where it's like, oh, hi. Like for the whole first half of the episode, he's not even mentioned. Right. And so I'm just wondering, like, how are you feeling about how the cast is being used?
I think they're still figuring it out. They're still figuring out the dynamics. They figured out that Tilly with Stamets is good. Tilly with Burnham is good. Pike with, you
anybody.
Know, yeah, Pike with the furniture is good. I think they're still figuring it out. And they're trying to, I think it'll be a while until we really can see more TNG-like episodes where we have a really good propulsive plot, but we also have a lot of character development going on.
Or maybe this is just the show. I mean, I just did a rewatch of The Office, like you do, and I'm now doing a Parks and Rec one. And it's interesting to see how many of those background characters stayed background characters for a couple seasons before they became so integral to the show, and you really got a sense for them. I mean, like, Creed was in the background for like three seasons before. Like, it's like, now I know who Creed is.
It took them a while to figure out how to use him, and I'm wondering if that is happening here too.
Well, they have an ensemble cast.
It is a very large ensemble.
It's a large
cast.
And they keep
ensemble.
Adding people.
Yeah. These people.
Yeah, like Colbert. We didn't even see Colbert.
They still have stuff they have to constantly do. They're moving in the background and giving life to this ship. And it's still very valuable, even if it's background work for them. I don't feel like they have to have lines for me to feel like this ship is alive and they have identity. I don't know. I buy into it. I don't need for there to be a heavy-handed, oh, I need a line delivery now, and I'm going to give a quick weird monologue that like takes everyone else out of the story.
No, but I also think that Tig Notaro brings a lot to the series that doesn't have, right?
Yeah,
well, we got
that humor.
We got a season 3 renewal. I think today, right?
Yes, today.
Awesome.
So there's going to be room to see her again and to go deeper into these characters.
When we saw the squid, I totally thought she had rigged up the drone to make it like hyper advanced, because like she was doing some crazy rigging stuff, with rocket raccoon
style. She's stringing some bubble gum.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, this is her. We're going to see that she's pulling them out of the temporal anomaly.
Tig is a red angel, guys.
Well, I mean, that would have made a lot of sense. I mean, you're kind of stuck. You're worried. What are you going to do about the ship? I don't know. Call the engineer. Like, that's what you normally might do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why not do it?
Well, she's
time?
Not the chief engineer. She's just like a.
Do we have a chief engineer?
Yeah, they've mentioned a chief engineer before. We haven't met the chief engineer.
Yeah, and then what happened to the chief of security?
She's
braces. She's not around.
Yeah,
braces not around.
She's just around eating burgers in the corner.
I'm just I know they're still trying to figure out how to use
just
the
cast. Cleaning her retainer in the back.
But that's what I'm just trying to figure out when they're going to settle down.
Running a little long. Anything else we want to say about this episode?
Oh, one more thing I got to say. Tilly running. How come we get to see Tilly like running marathons through the ship, and all of a sudden she's about to have a heart attack trying to keep up?
She was sore. I think she had like a leg day. The day before that scene was shot, because that is I have seen that face in myself.
A marathon run is different than a sprint.
I mean, she was wearing those Discovery boots. She didn't have her Nikes on.
Okay, is that what it was? Because I was just like,
her
she's struggling
her.
to hang out with Stamets walking through the hall.
I had a couple of loose end notes I wanted to bring up.
Do what it.
You did.
Freaking amazing. And then Tilly saying, you know how I get around violations of causality? Great lines from her.
I like that.
And I thought it was a good nod to the weird, edgy cursing and nudity they were throwing out in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this isn't your grandpa's Star Trek. We'll show some Klingon boobs and also have someone say fuck once for some weird reason.
And here's a double Klingon dick.
But I like that. Like Tilly says freaking amazing. And then they have this little banter where it's like, yeah, you told me I have to watch my language. And they're like, there you go, audience. That's why we're not doing that anymore. We also saw this one brief scene where you see the interior of the ship and like the scale of the ship when it's like this roller coaster looking thing where they got in the elevator, and I assume it was Ash and Pike moving to where they're going to be on that ship.
Hmm.
And I thought it was like a really cool scene, but it was very brief. Do you guys remember seeing this?
Not at all.
It looked like a bunch of roller coaster.
No. I remember, but I wasn't really paying attention. It did look cool, but I didn't think
the first 10 minutes flew by for me. They were very propulsive, a little too fast for me.
Propulsive.
At one point, Pike says, have you heard of Bad Penny?
Yeah. A bad penny.
Was this just like the standard colloquialism, or was there something Star Trek?
It's standard.
It's just standard. Yeah, like you can't get rid of a bad penny.
You always have a penny in your pocket, and you're like, oh, this thing.
The way he said it, I thought, okay, maybe there's some sort of Star Trek inside thing. No, I just wanted to ask about
it. It's given him like a folksy sheen.
Then I also wanted to point out that I thought it was funny that they see a temporal anomaly, and they think, oh, you know what we need to do? We need to shoot at it. It just seemed like a weird...
Well,
like,
it was a probe, so like an exploratory probe.
That's true. They didn't shoot
like a
Star Trek lasers at it.
But when they shot at it, it like freaked out and made some weird bubble thing that locked them in, right? Or whatever happened there. It was a little bit unclear for me what was going on, but it just reminded me of that Tumblr post, I want to say, where people were talking about the role of humans in the Star Trek universe and that humans are alive and functional because they're so fucking crazy in relation to all other aliens. They'll do the weirdest shit that no other rational beings would ever think to do. Like, let's take two dying stars and just collide them into each other just to see what would happen.
Right.
Anyway, I was just a little bit amused by that. And my one last note is that Leland looks like garbage with a shaved head.
That's mean.
I don't think he should have a shaved head.
Well, he's going to be dead soon.
The guy would look really handsome.
Joe's going to murder his ass soon, right? Yeah, she's going to straight up kill him. Yeah. It's going to happen.
She's going to snake hiss and he's gone.
Yes. Well, I really like that Arium is about to be a big deal. And I'm riding with you, Mariah, on that theory. I like that theory a lot.
Newest standing theory. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. Okay, thanks for listening to Star Trek Pod. Find us. You know, I didn't shoot out the URLs at the beginning of this episode. I just wanted to dive in and tell everybody how much I did not like this.
You were ready.
Hot takes.
Lukewarm take. Yeah. Okay, so you can find us at StarTrekPod.com. Grant, you want to pimp that Patreon again?
Yeah, that's Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Please go there and support this podcast that you love so much. Give us a dollar or two or five or ten or however much is the limit on your parents' credit card that you stole and you want to use.
And yes, because there's 12-year-olds listening to this podcast.
Maybe, I don't know.
Steal your parents' credit card, kids.
It's 30-year-olds in student loan debt living in basements.
Yeah, there you go.
Very accurate. All right. Yeah. And find us at StarTrekPod.com. Follow us on Twitter at StarTrekPod. We're on Instagram now at StarTrekPod. And guys, you want to throw out your Twitter handles so that people know where they can find you? Mariah.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Mariah Gossett. You can find me there. It's spelt weird, but it's chill.
I am on Twitter at Clyde Haynes, or you can hit up my website at www.keyandclyde.com.
I'm Baron Von Grant. I don't know why it sounded regal.
I know why. I'm just not going to say it.
Don't say it.
I'm at Mike Moody on Twitter, and we're part of a podcast network called Electric Sweater. See all of our podcasts.
Electric Sweater!
At electricsweater.com. And one more thing. I don't have time to go over all the great reviews that we've gotten over the past 2 weeks. I just want to thank everybody for leaving us reviews on Apple Podcasts. So if you dig this podcast, we'd love to get a 5-star review from you on Apple Podcasts. And I am going to get to reading some of those on a future episode. So keep leaving them. Thanks. Live long and prosper.
Fight for the future.
Bye.